Leadership File on Premier.
This is the Leadership File, bringing you conversations with leaders and experts on leadership themes. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and whether you're listening live or via one of the many thousands who listen via a podcast, it's great to have you along. Part of the job of the leader is to come to terms with reality, and that reality for some church leaders is pretty grim when it comes to working with children and young people. Statistics from the Church of England in 2018 suggest that nationally, Sunday attendance for 0-16s dropped below 100,000 for the first time ever. And according to the Single Church Returns, 38% of churches have no 0-16s, and 68% of them have five or fewer 0-16s. So what could you do if you lead a church and have no young people? Well, thankfully, the Church of England has a National Youth Evangelism Officer appointed to sort it all out. And I'm delighted he's joining us today on the Leadership File. Welcome, Jimmy.
Good morning, Andy.
So I'm welcoming Jimmy Dale to the Leadership File. He's the National Youth Evangelism Officer. And I said that with tongue in cheek, Jimmy. But to some extent, I emphasised the negative in my introduction because, of course, initiatives such as Fresh Expressions and Messy Church have encouraged numbers to turn up. But even so, you have a task in your hands. So tell us your route into your role, first of all, and then we'll look a little bit at the kind of things you're going to be doing.
Yeah, sure. So I often say that my role is in some ways, it's a bit of a crisis role. The church is fairly good at identifying problems, but then not necessarily knowing how to solve them. And so my role came out of so Archbishop of Canterbury has three priorities: so prayer, evangelism, and reconciliation. And under evangelism, he had up until recently something called the Evangelism Task Group, which is kind of the great and the good of the Church of England gathered together to look at how do we start to re-energize the church around evangelism. And I think quite often when people think of kind of committees and groups like that, there's kind of your very cliche image of what it looks like to be on a kind of national church council. And actually, this group was incredibly dynamic. It had people like Andy Croft from Soul Survivor and Mark Russell when he worked at Church Army. And it was people who kind of had their ear to the ground when it came to young people. The Archbishop apparently posed the question what was happening with young people and evangelism. And the answer was a fairly resounding silence. And so they decided that they should do something about it. And so they decided to create a role to look at that. And so that became my role. And the job remit is still to this day to promote and resource youth evangelism across the Church of England, which is broad and quite daunting, if nothing else. But I ended up taking on the role back in 2016, and it's kind of been 4 years of just trying to work out what does that look like, what does it mean to put some flesh around that. But yeah, prior to that, I was working for Youth for Christ, running a local Youth for Christ centre in East London, and before that, I worked as a parish youth worker. So quite a change of gear, but yeah, really exciting.
I mean, I listed a few stats, Jimmy, in the introduction, but there may be other stats that you use that give you a window into the kind of challenging you're facing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think in this role, I often end up quoting stats to the extent that I've kind of earned myself the nickname of Mr. Stats. And I think one of the things which I've realized is that there's an enormous power in stats, that quite often we talk about things in anecdote. Let me tell you about what's happening at St. Thomas's, and people listen with interest. But there's always a slight sense of, well, it's different for them. Like they've got more resource than they do. They're in a better place than we are. They're doing something which we couldn't do. But I think that there's an insight that stats give you. And so within this role, one of the things which I've ended up doing a lot of is looking into a lot of the stats around the Church of England, which is where, so back in 2018, the stats which you quoted at the beginning came as part of a paper, which you can go online and you can look at. It's about 40 pages long. But if you like stats, you'll love it. because it's in-depth analysis of children and young people's engagement across the Church of England. And I'd originally started looking at these figures because we were trying to track down where were their youth workers in the Church of England. And we realised really quickly that actually the statistics were pretty horrifying. So not only were we in decline, so we're in decline with young people almost twice the pace as we are with adults. So as the Church of England, we decline by about 3% each year. So over the last 5 years, we've declined by 12% in adults. But we've declined in the same period of time by 20% in young people. And actually, the number of young people that we're losing is declining faster, it's picking up pace. So if you look at the 10-year period from 2003 to 2013, we declined by 25% in 0 to 16s. So that's over a 10-year period. Over a 5-year period following that, so 2013 to 2018, we declined by 22%. So we declined by nearly the same percentage in half the time. And then most recently, so 2017 to 2018, so just a 12-month period, we declined by 8%. And so not only is there a decline rate, but actually that decline rate is picking up. But I mean, I think there's some really negative statistics like that. But also I think that there's statistics give us the opportunity to see some of the opportunity and the potential. And so one of the big things that I talk a lot about is actually the openness that young people have. I genuinely believe, looking at the statistics, that we have never seen a generation which has been more open to faith than we have now. Back in 2015, there was a big piece of research done called Talking Jesus, which, again, if you haven't seen that, go and have a look. Essentially, it came from a place of realizing that when we talk about evangelism, everything we talk about is based on anecdote. And so my friend Dave once tried talking to someone about Jesus. They didn't like it, therefore no one likes it. So they decided to do a whole bunch of research about how people felt about having faith shared with them and how Christians felt about sharing faith. But part of that, they discovered that 57% of adults in England would identify as Christian. And within that, you've got inherited and cultural and nominal and a whole bunch of reasons why people might tick that. So they set a parameter on what qualifies you as a practicing Christian, which was that if you went to church once a month and if you prayed and read your Bible once a week. And what they found was that 9% of adults qualified as practicing Christians. But actually, while that's still probably a little bit higher than you might have thought, it's kind of within the realms of reason. So back in 2016, they decided they'd do the same piece of research with 11 to 18 year olds. And they found that 41% of 11 to 18 year olds identify as Christian, whether that's nominal, cultural, inherited, whatever. But 13%, so 13%, met the criteria being practicing Christians. And the real outrage which came from that was around 13% of young people attending church once a month. But the thing which is really interesting, that only 11% of young people said that they never attended church, and 51% claimed that they attended church at least once a month. So the 13% is those who are attending church, reading their Bible and praying. And the thing which that tells us is that there is huge swathes of young people who are going to something and they think that's church, that they are, whether that's a chapel service in their school or they go to a youth group or their guide's church meets in a hall or like whatever that looks like, they think that they're there. And so there's this kind of, there's this incredible openness. There's I'm just in the process of rereading What Makes Churches Grow by Bob Jackson, which is a fantastic book if you haven't read it. And in that, he talks about a question in a telephone survey, which was sponsored by Tear Fund, which found that amongst adults that there were 3 million people in this country who were open to going to church if somebody would invite them. And so I think it's that thing that we've got this enormous swathe of young people who are either really open to engaging or think that they already are engaging. But that as the church, we are seeing the numbers of young people who we have dropping off. And so I think, yeah, in amongst that, those statistics, that there's some really depressing stuff, but there's some really encouraging stuff as well.
No, it's great to hear, Jimmy. I suppose just one thing to clarify, you're talking Church of England here. No doubt there are separate figures for non-Church of England. And I'm not imagining they're going to be massively different, but it would just be, I mean, is there evidence that other denominations are also seeing the same sort of decline as the Church of England?
Yes, I mean, we've been really open with these statistics, and I think part of that is about hitting a place of honesty and saying actually we need to face up to kind of where we are. And I sit as part of a denominational roundtable with a whole bunch of other heads of youth ministry for different denominations. And the Church of England, it has way more access to research and statistics within its own denomination in a way that other denominations just don't have, really. But so while there's not the sense of being able to say with all certainty where other denominations sit, I think that there is a real sense across the board that lots of other denominations would be in a very similar place. It was really interesting, actually, the feedback which we got when last year when we put the paper out around where the Church of England sat with 0 to 16, because I ended out being roped into all kinds of conversations with people who would say, oh yeah, but I'm part of a vineyard church, and the thing which you need to understand is that we're really growing and it's really exciting. And they would immediately cite, like, oh, it's great, like Trent Vineyard, for instance, like, look at all the young people who are there. And I mean, what the vineyard are doing is great, but actually what essentially you're doing with a comparison point would be to say, oh, within the Church of England, it's great. Have you seen what HDB are doing? That there's kind of, it's really easy to be drawn to the places where there is growth and where there is life and where there's exciting things going on. But I think every denomination has churches where there is growth and where there is life and where there are things which are happening. But there's a whole bunch of other churches where at best it's kind of ticking over, and at worst actually it's just in gradual decline. And just the Church of England happens to have a whole bunch of statistics which back up what we're afraid to see anyway.
Sure. The issue of the lack of young people in the local church is obviously a real one for some leaders listening, but also it's a kind of instructive for any Christian in leadership who faces this kind of negative situation. You must be asked about the situation a lot. So what are the things you say to church leaders about this issue?
So, I mean, I think the biggest thing is it's getting people to grapple with this isn't something which is going to fix itself, that this needs to be an intentional choice to address this. And I use an analogy, which partially because it gives me an opportunity to boast, but also because I think it helps understand this a little bit more. So a couple of years ago, I did an Ironman race. If you've not come across Ironman before, Ironman is a triathlon, which is over kind of quite extreme long distance. So you swim for 2.4 miles in the sea, and then you cycle for 112 miles, and then you run a marathon on the end. And it's this huge feat of endurance, but I've always wanted to do it. I saw the guys growing up who would do it, and they'd compete, and there was always part of me which longed to see if I could achieve just completing it. And so a couple of years back, I put huge amounts of training in. So I was doing 30 plus hours of training a week on top of a full-time job. You know, getting up at 4 a.m. to go for cycle rides in the rain. There's a joke in the Ironman world that if you get to the start line and you're still married, you didn't train hard enough. It's one of those things that it takes an enormous level of dedication to be able to get over the start line, but even more so to get over the finish line. But I did it because I wanted to do Ironman. Now, I also say I want to learn how to speak French. And I genuinely believe that I am telling you the truth. I will say it now wholeheartedly. I would love to be able to speak French. It's on my bucket list. But I am not giving 30 seconds a week to learning French, let alone 30 hours. If I gave 30 hours a week to learning how to speak French, I could speak French. So actually what I'm saying isn't that I want to learn how to speak French. What I'm saying is I want to have the ability to speak French as long as I don't have to do anything, it doesn't cost me anything, I don't have to change anything. If I can just click my fingers and suddenly I'm fluent in French, that's what I want. And I think where we are in the church is we have a whole bunch of leaders who will say, oh, Jimmy, young people are such a priority for us. We would love to see more young people in our church. But the reality is that young people, it's French, not Ironman. That ultimately what we want is we want to be able to click our fingers and a whole bunch of teenagers file into church and sit nice and quietly, as long as we don't have to do anything, change anything, or it doesn't cost us anything to see that happen. But actually it's Ironman. That there's a huge amount of commitment which is needed, that actually you've got to be able to make difficult decisions, that you've got to be able to kind of take on some of the cost that's involved in that. And in doing that, you will see the difference happen. But I think for a lot of people, it just feels too daunting. I often say when I use that analogy that for lots of people, I quite enjoy seeing their face when you describe what an Iron Man is, because you can, you just see it kind of dawn across their face how horrific this sounds. And I think for lots of people, when they begin to say, well, what would I need to do to see young people come engage with my church, that that same look comes over, that, oh, this just sounds like too much. I'm just not sure. And I think for lots of people, there's kind of that, there's that phrase in the church, which is that the church is the only organization that exists purely for the benefit of its non-members. Utter rubbish. I think for most churches, the church exists purely for the benefit of its members. And actually, I think that for lots of churches, to get young people means that maybe we have to do something which doesn't directly benefit the guys who we've already got, so that we can reach the guys who we're looking to reach.
We're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Jimmy Dale. Jimmy is the National Youth Evangelism Officer for the Church of England. We'll be back just after this. So welcome back to the Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Jimmy Dale. He's the National Youth Evangelism Officer. And I joked that he's appointed to sort out the challenge of the fewness of 0 to 16s in the church, particularly concerns amongst the youth. So, Jimmy, thank you for sharing your story. Well done on the Iron Man. fabulous effort. Anyone who's, I think any of those activities would be enough, but all three at once is something astonishing. But it is a wonderful analogy of the leadership challenge in any area of life, really, is do we really want something, or are we just, you know, talking about it? So I suppose I have to ask the question, Jimmy, is it okay for some local churches not to have young people and not worry about it and think, well, other churches can have the young people, we won't?
I mean, I think again, the research which we brought out looking at kind of where the Church of England was at, that actually that's something which I hear all the time, is I would hear churches say, oh, you know what, Jimmy, we haven't got many young people, so we don't really focus on that. Or we don't need to have young people because the big church up the road has all the young people and they're doing a great job. And actually what the statistics showed us really quickly was that a lot of this is based on a narrative which we've written ourselves, that actually the big church up the road hasn't had young people for the last 10 years, but we still think that they do. And that, I mean, I had one church leader who I was chatting to, and I said, I was looking through, and they had about 26, 27 young people kind of aged 0 to 16. And I said, oh, well, it doesn't sound like a lot, but at the same time, actually, that makes you 600 and whatever it was in the Church of England, if you were to be put into a standings table. And the look on this church leader's face as they turned to me and said, I'm so pleased you told me this. We've got a meeting this weekend to decide if we shut down our youth and children's ministry because we've decided it's not doing anything. And I think we write a narrative that what we're doing isn't worth doing. And actually, I think every church has a duty to reach young people. Within the Church of England, vicars take on the kind of the cure of souls for a parish. And I get lots of people who will say to me, oh, you have to understand, Jimmy, we don't have any young people in our parish. And I'm saying, no, you do. They're just not coming to your church. Whether that's that you've got a school in your area, whether that's that there's young people living on the estate near you, wherever it is, part of that cure of souls, part of that duty is to say, how do we go out and how do we reach them? I think there's a whole bunch of churches out there who have prioritized a certain area of mission, and I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think that's great. So you've got churches which would say that they are student churches, or that they're family churches, or that they're young professional churches, and you know what, that's great. But that's not to say, well, if there's a student church up the road, we don't need to bother about students. Or even for that church, unless you're a student, you can only come here if you're a student. That actually, I think, to say we're a church and we don't have young people and we don't need young people, to call a spade, you're essentially saying we're putting ourselves into palliative care. That we've put a timeline on how long it is until we run down the clock, And my job is really just to get us there safely. And I think for some churches, the hard reality is that that is where they're at. I once had a church leader say to me, I'll be honest, Jimmy, I don't have young people and I'm not going to get young people. So I'm going to retire before my congregation dies. So it's not really my problem. And I think while that sounds quite shocking, I think for lots of us, there is that temptation to say, well, you know what, I'm just going to focus on what I have. I'm just going to kind of run my time. But actually, long term, that has huge implications. I think if you're a church who are listening to this and you don't have young people, the question you have to ask is, why don't we have young people? And quite often, I think it's because we become quite comfortable with what we have. And I suppose the challenge is to say, where are there young people in our community? Is it in the local school? Is it on the street where the church is? And how could we go about reaching out to those? That might look like doing some door knocking. It might look like doing some schools ministry. It might look like doing some detached work. At its most primitive, like if you're a church which doesn't have young people, you should be praying for young people. Because you know what, if you can get a church to pray for young people for a whole year, I bet they feel really differently about young people at the end of that year than they did at the start. So yeah, I mean, I think it's part of what every church should have as a core within its mission and outreach, is how do we see young people as a priority?
Okay, so I mean, that's a lovely to hear you speak with so much enthusiasm and to kind of sink that myth that actually you could be a local church and not even bother about young people because they're not coming. So thank you for that inspirational drive. Sadly, time has almost defeated us, Jimmy. But I did want to ask that there will be some leaders listening who feel completely stuck. And just what would be one thing? Would it be the prayer thing that you'd want to do, or doing a survey of the local area? What would be the one thing if a leader's thinking, crumbs, I feel absolutely stuck here, what do I do next?
I think there's two things. So we talk, when we think about evangelism, I think for lots of people, they think about outreach evangelism. So they think about whether that's reaching out to local schools or doing detached work in the local park and meeting young people there. I think that there's loads of opportunities to be able to engage with young people. And there's a whole bunch of organisations out there who are fantastic about resourcing and supporting and training people in how they can do that. But I think quite often we actually have a whole bunch of young people who already have some kind of level of engagement within the church. And we talk about retention evangelism as a thing, because actually I think quite often we don't recognise the young people who we have. So, I mean, I'll give you a statistic which just helps to show this. So in 2018, there were 85,000 infant and child baptisms in the Church of England. Alongside that, on a Sunday morning, there are 94,000 0 to 16s attending. That means that just in 2018, if those who were baptised, let's be honest about what that is. That's a set of parents coming to a church and saying, we want to raise our child as a Christian. Can you as the church help us to do that? If we could get them to just commit to coming to church for 1 year, I mean, I would long for lifelong disciples, but we'll settle for a year for now, that would make up over 90% of all the 0 to 16s in the Church of England. And yet for so many churches, there's a sense of, well, they're just coming for a bit of a party. I think that there's so many opportunities that we have when you start to analyse and say, where are the opportunities to engage? And again, I think so often we think about this and we think about teenagers, but every successful youth ministry is built on successful children's ministry, and every successful children's ministry is built on successful families ministry. So if you don't have anything, start with families. Whether that's infant baptisms, whether that's looking at saying, can we run a messy church once a month? There's so many different opportunities to be able to engage. At kind of children's ministry, you know what? Like, engage with your local schools. I think that there's such an openness at the moment for people who want to, they want that support, they want to engage. So go down to your local school and say, how can we serve you guys? How can we get involved? And if you have young people, but you only have a few, I think my encouragement to you is, how can we go deep rather than go wide? I think one of the things which I'm constantly challenged by is when you look at Jesus' ministry, Jesus had the 5,000, and of the 5,000, he had the 72, and the 72, he had the 12, he had the 3, and the 3, he had the 1. And you look at the amount of time and investment he puts into it, especially the 3, and it's embarrassingly disproportionate. There's whole chunks of, whole chapters of the Gospels where you assume that all 12 disciples are there and the camera pans back and you've just got 3 of them, and like the other 9 have been left on the other side of a lake 3 chapters previously. But something really interesting happens that when Jesus dies and rises and ascends, the other 9 we don't really read that much about, that it's the 3 who he's invested in who roll out the global church. They're the ones who take faith to the rest of the world. And I think that so often we look at the 3 that we have in our church and we spend all our time dreaming of the 5,000, rather than saying, actually, how do we invest in the 3 so that then they can reach the world?
Jimmy, it's an inspiration to listen to you. So thank you so much. Sadly, time's defeated us, but thrilling to hear your sense of vision for this. And I know that many Christians in leadership are going to be listening and thinking, yeah, count me in. So thank you so much.
That's quite all right. Great to chat to you.
So that was Jimmy Dale, the Church of England's National Youth Evangelism Officer. Do listen back to this. There's many gems that Jimmy shared, particularly some of the stats that maybe you need to make a note of. But it's thrilling to hear that sense of vision that actually, though the numbers are not so great now, maybe in a decade's time, who knows, it might be completely transformed if we could only do our bit. So my thanks to Jimmy, and thank you for listening and for taking up the challenge. You're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, and I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 4. Or via podcast, however you listen to this. God bless.